this ensemble you have going today?
Well, I have my work pants on and some t-shirt.
It says "Color Me Raw."
You got your street clothes on from the waist up, and you're like a mullet.
Yes.
Party in the top, business in the bottom.
That's right. All right, back to the recording.
Okay.
Chop chop. Greetings, Savory Inferiors, and welcome to Vampire Insider, the unofficial podcast of the Anne Rice Immortal Universe. Each week, co-hosts Christina LaRusso, Joanne Palumbo, and myself, Mark Snedeker, recap and analyze episodes, delve into Anne Rice's library, and have in-depth discussions of other works about the supernatural. This week, at long last, Joanne gets to talk about her favorite show of all time, Dawson's Teeth. No, sorry, it's not called Dawson's Teeth. I've been told that is disrespectful. The Vampire Diaries, which was originally on the CW, but is now streaming on Peacock and Max. Please join me in welcoming my co-hosts. Hello, Christina LaRusso. Hello, Joanne Palumbo.
Hi, Mark Snedeker. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, guys. How are we doing?
Could not be better.
Excited still to be back.
I have been waiting months for this episode.
I know. This is the biggie. This is where we're going to start talking about the Vampire Diaries, or as Mark likes to call them,
Vampire 90210. Joni.
Well, Mark is an asshole, so there we have it.
Joni, this is your chance to shine.
This is my moment, Mark. This is my Super Bowl.
So before we go on and talk about Vampire Diaries, Mark actually had a good idea.
It happens.
This week. Fundamentally, we are an Interview with the Vampire podcast, so we want to maintain our connection with that story.
And with that community.
Absolutely.
All right, so what we thought we would do is invite some of the members of the community who write fanfic, and there's some really quality authors out there writing some really interesting, fun, and beautiful stuff. And so we wanted to be able to feature some of them here on the podcast so people get an idea of what's out there, where to find it, and, you know, if something really is interesting to you, then you can follow that author, read their stories, whatever it is. So what we're going to do each week is we're going to have a fanfic author that has given us permission to read an excerpt from one of their pieces and then give you all the contact and link information so that you can go and read it for yourself.
Joanne selected this author, and the story is called Selling Mirrors in the City of the Blind by Kaimurari. The summary of this story, which can be found on Archive of Our Own or AO3, the summary is Louis is a man who cannot live without illusions. And her notes are, this is me having my human Rashid headcanon cake and eat it too. I appreciate this author's focus on Rashid and Armand.
Because all googly-eyed.
I'm an Armand girly. I'm especially an Assad girly. But all right. So what we're going to do is I'm going to read a little bit of an excerpt, and then the three of us are going to discuss this briefly. And then, as Mark said, we'll put it links in the episode notes as well as on our Twitter. So here we go. At dawn, I read to him. He'll pick a day or the beginning of a sentence, and I'll take over, reciting whole pages from memory because I've read them so many times. He sleeps in the middle of the bed on his back. The cover is pulled all the way to the chin in a neat line. His hands are folded across his stomach. It makes it exceedingly difficult to tell when he's fallen asleep. I test it by letting the narration drift into silence. Sometimes he'll murmur the next sentence and I'll resume. Sometimes he'll gently chide. You've missed a line, Rashid. I'll go back to Dear Diary. Today I finally figured out how to scoop out an eyeball without bursting it. If not, I'll let the silence continue for a while before getting up. Check the humidity, check the temperature, then depart. He does not become angelic in sleep. He becomes insubstantial. The sheet barely rises over the shape of him. At dusk, I'll find him in the same position, eyes open. Good evening, Mr. Dulac. Good evening, Rashid.
Whoa.
That's good. So good. So now there's more to this story, and ultimately, without giving too much away, because we don't want to give away the whole scope of the story, what this does, and I thought was so great, the author provides a very nice explanation for what's going on with Rashid slash Armand.
Yeah, it's a clever take on the Rashid Armand dichotomy and how it came to be.
That's why I chose it, because when I was reading it, it gave me this weird sense of peace and also kind of scratched a little itch that I have of what goes on at night when they're not, or day, whenever, when they're not recording with Daniel, the story. And I really liked her take on kind of what's going on behind those closed doors between Rashid and Louis. She's a great writer too, by the way.
She has several turns of phrase that just shook me.
Yeah.
This, and it's, like I said, it's a short story, so you can read it pretty quickly.
I've been talking with her back and forth, you know, getting her permission for the story, et cetera, making sure I have pronouns right, name right, everything. And Joanne, you want to hear what she had to say about you?
Yes.
So I told her which one we were reading, Selling Mirrors, right? And that we're going to record it tonight. She's like, surprised that one was picked, since Joanne has been gnashing her teeth at the Rashid reveal.
The reason I don't like the Rashid reveal is because it just left me with so many questions, too many questions for my little feeble mind to comprehend. And she's come along and she's filled in a couple of those little holes for me. So I like it. That's why I like it.
It's a really satisfying explanation for why they're doing this thing with Rashid, why right. Rashid is Armand. It's there. She's not saying that Rashid is a person and Armand is a separate person. She still has that.
Which is good, because that'd be very confusing.
That would be. So she still
Are they both played by Assad?
They are. So she's got, that is the character, Rashid Armand. Yeah. But she gives this really satisfying explanation for what is happening there. Yeah. And it has to do really with Louis.
And his psychoses.
And his, well, neuroses, let's say.
And his needs, what he needs. And Rashid gives him what he needs.
He needs two different things.
Right.
And Rashid slash Armand is providing two separate things.
He's providing Rashid things and Armand
things.
The Armand thing was pretty rough, so I can't wait for everybody to read that part.
The Armand thing is very true to Armand's character.
Yeah.
You really get to know more about Armand and how he is in further on, obviously, in The Vampire Armand and other books. And this Armand version has great integrity to that. I can completely see Armand being
quietly psychotic.
This guy. Yeah. Right. And like kind of psychotic on demand.
Almost a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
It's by request. And it fits also so well with the Anne Rice power dynamic, how she liked to play with master servant and dominant and submissive. There is nothing about this story that I would even question. And I think it's just fantastic.
Loved it.
As you know, I'm a bit of a writing expert. Here's what I really appreciate, and these are the kinds of things I look for. She didn't slip into cliche. So, and in fact, she goes directly against like hackneyed cliche type things. And I'll read that section again. He does not become angelic in sleep. Because, of course, that's the easy peasy way to go. Oh, you know, Louis, you know, let's the cares of the world, you know, go when he sleeps and he looks like a, you know, a sweet little vampire baby, whatever it is. But she doesn't do that because that's the trap, right? So he doesn't become angelic in sleep. He becomes insubstantial.
I love that.
Which is quite great imagery.
It's very raw and very authentic.
Yes. And her imagery describing the way he sleeps too, in that very staid, controlled sort of sleeping pose, where the sheets and blankets are very precise. Yep. They cover him. His hands are crossed over his chest. Hard to tell whether he's sleeping or not.
And can't you kind of see Louis sleeping that way?
Of course.
100%. Well, any vampire, right? Because they're dead.
That's a vampire-y way to sleep.
They're dead.
Just excellent imagery. I would absolutely read more of her work. I highly recommend.
I think that one of the things she did very, very well, she just doesn't get into like a lot of exposition.
Right.
You know?
So I would say Kaimurari is such a good writer that we may have accidentally crossed the picket line by allowing her to be on the podcast.
You're not joking. She's really good. And, you know, for everyone that knows that I hate the Rashid storyline, the way it unfolded, to have her get me to be like excited about it, you got to be good. And I'm really now like, I want her to write more about this. Give me more.
I'll kind of be disappointed if the explanation isn't a little bit along these lines.
Right.
Because she really gets Louie too.
Yeah.
Right. Like this is, she's super, for me,
dialed in.
That's the Louie that I really understand how he is, and like this torture, that really tortured Louis. That for me, there's book Louis in here too, as well as sort of the ethic of book Louis. That was a great read, and we're looking forward to next week. We're going to be featuring another author in our next episode. And please, if you are a fanfic writer, or if you have a favorite and would like to submit them, we will reach out to those authors and see if they will be open to us sharing their fanfiction. It's important for us as a member of the fan community to be supportive of the other people doing creative things in the fan community. I mean, take it away, girl. This is all you. You're going to lead the discussion about Vampire Diaries.
In fact, I might grab a quick nap.
Mark, shush it. All right, so Vampire Diaries is a television series that aired from 2009 to 2017 based on the books written by L.J. Smith of the same name. They were also called The Vampire Diaries. I suggest checking them out. Very super easy, simple read. I figured we would kind of just start with everybody giving their hot take. So, Christina, would you like to give your hot take on season one?
Yeah, it's a little deeper than it appears on its surface. And I know that Mark has been joking about Vampires 90210. But there is that, right? So yeah. We can look at it, I think, in a number of ways. One is that it's a love triangle. And it's essentially what I said in our initial episode when we talked about it as a part of the genre. The vampire genre, I said it's really like Dawson's Creek. And it could
with
be
teeth.
With teeth, right? Yeah. Dawson's Creek or Beverly
Dawson's
Hills.
Dawson's teeth, maybe.
Dawson's teeth.
Thank you for my next joke.
Christina, did you have to give him that one? What the hell?
I didn't
She didn't do it on purpose, trust me.
Damn it.
She doesn't like to help me in any way during these things.
Right. So Twilight, you know, and all of those things. But it's more than that. And I think that really there's a bigger story that's being told here in some ways. And that's what's really intriguing to me. But it's also fun to watch. It's also very soapy. And there are a lot of cliffhangers. And for a while there, I was like, how many characters am I going to have to remember? Because now I'm getting older.
Yeah, don't worry. They'll kill some of them off for you.
And not only characters, but there's different, like, species. You know, hybrids, tribrids, doppelgangers, travelers, heretics.
So, yeah. So for me, hot take is I think it's a great show, at least in this early season. And I imagine that I will feel about the later seasons of this show, how I generally feel about later seasons of most shows that go on for many, many seasons.
Which is, start to play the Oscar music to wrap it up.
It's jumped the shark a little bit.
So in a way, it's certainly going to remind you of Twilight because vampires are going back to high school. I have to say they pulled it off better than Twilight did. And of course, it's a TV show, not a movie, so they can get much more detail. I do think that the Dawson's Creek analogy and even the Beverly Hills 90210 analogy is pretty good because you have a bunch of very good-looking high school students who are probably about 27. Right? I mean, I assume that all the characters in the show are 18.
Well, no. Elena's 15. Bonnie, Caroline, they're all 15.
Well, okay, so that's a little bit of a problem, age-wise, consent.
You know, teens in these shows are always more precocious.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's because the actors are actually in their late 20s. I mean, that's probably true.
No, Nina Dobrev was 19. Stefan was, Paul Wesley was 27 when it started, and Ian was 30. So, yeah, I think somewhere around there.
And it's similar to Interview in that vampires are real people, and they definitely owe They definitely owe a lot of their origin to the Anne Rice books, because they've given it, it's a very similar story to what she did with Louis, which is, okay, now you're an immortal, now deal with it. And not everybody deals with it well. Some of them rabidly embrace the life. They're just going to go around and kill shit. Others, less so, more anguished, tortured, oh, woe is me, maybe I should end it all type of thing. That's an interesting take. And I was pleased to see in one of the early episodes them reference Anne Rice positively and Stephenie Meyer negatively, which I 100% agree with.
Yeah, well, Damon agrees with you.
It's kind of Buffy in Manassas. You know,
Isn't
like they've taken her from California and
put her in Northern Virginia for some reason.
I don't know if Elena is really a Buffy character per se, but she's similar. I don't know if she's going to kick any ass later. Maybe we'll see.
You know, and a good vampire boy and then a bad vampire boy.
Of course,
boy.
Yeah.
And the tension.
Yeah, like Dylan, that Dylan guy. Yeah, he's a problem.
Oh, my God. Listen, Mark.
Brandon is okay, but the Dylan guy is kind of
And you got to admit that Stefan does give off strong Brandon vibes.
Oh, he does. He's got the hero hair like Brandon has.
Yeah, 100%.
And then that Rob Lowe guy.
You stop calling him Rob Lowe. He's not Rob Lowe.
I mean, Rob Lowe's a very good looking guy.
I know, but he's better looking than Rob Lowe. It's like calling a filet mignon meatloaf.
Rob Lowe's cheekbones could cut Summerholder in half.
Oh, wow. All right.
All right. So my hot take, first of all, Mark, I completely reject your comparisons to 90210 and to Dawson's Creek and to Buffy, to anything really. I do agree with you that it is a rip off of Interview with the Vampire.
Let's say inspired by.
Inspired by. My hot take is, of course, obviously, I loved it. It's got everything that you would ever want in a show. I mean, albeit it's a sci-fi teen drama show, but it's still got a lot of good things. There's a love story, kind of love triangle. But when you think about it, there's really a lot of, you know, multiple love stories because they're really hooking up all over the place on this show.
Yeah, really. These guys
they're banging like fucking rabbits. I
hope they're
man.
Being careful.
Caroline, she's just on every guy that she can get on.
She's a ho-fo show.
She hooks up with everybody. And like, do you remember the one scene where she's sitting at the, they're sitting in front of the Mystic Girl and she says to Elena, it's not that hard. Boy likes girl, girl likes boy. Sex.
That was always my approach.
She's self-aware. What can you, I mean, you can, and no slut shaming. We're sex positive here on Vampire Insider.
Do you feel like she's sort of the charisma carpenter of this show?
She is. But you've got your sexy cast, your multiple bad guys. You've got witchy woo and vampires and all sorts of crazy mythological creatures running around Mystic Falls. It's hard for me to give a hot take because
it's your whole life.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark was actually secretly admitting to me that it's a good show. So
I said it right. Just five. It's not even secretly. I said it 5 minutes ago. That it's a good show.
Fair enough.
Dawson's teeth. All right, so shall we talk about season one?
Yeah, let me take a crack at it, Joanne. This is going to be the very quick 2 to 3 sentence description of what's going on in this season, and then we'll fill in some more details, all right? So this is a story about a young girl who has been orphaned. Her parents have died in a car crash, and she's in this kind of depression, this funk. And she has a family around her. She has a brother and she has an aunt that lives with her. And her name is Elena. She falls in love with this guy who appears to be about 17. And he's a student at her school. It turns out he's a vampire. And that he also has a brother who's an older brother. And he returns to town. And he's also a vampire. His name is Damon. Damon is the older, dangerous brother. They are from a founding family in Mystic Falls. And there's a lot of lore around that. There's a lot of importance and significance put on founding families. And Elena's family is also a part of the founding families. And
by founding families, do you mean rich white people?
Yes, indeed.
Daughters of the Confederacy.
That sort of thing. what develops in the season is Elena coming to terms with the fact that Stefan is a vampire and negotiating a relationship with him while also kind of harboring friendly and perhaps more emotional feelings towards his older brother, Damon. There are a plethora of characters that surround this love triangle, including a witch called Bonnie. She's just now kind of coming into her own and learning about her powers. But the witches play a very significant role in the history of this town and its population that includes vampires and werewolves.
Of course, yeah.
and doppelgangers. So there are elements that happen. We see scenes from the past when Damon and Stefan were alive, when they were still alive, and they...
What are your thoughts on those scenes, Christina? I would love to know, because it, you know, it's a historical piece.
We'll talk about that. Let's talk about that. But Stefan and Damon, you kind of get their origin story. How did they become vampires? And it has to do with a character who is called Catherine, who is a doppelganger, or who Elena is her doppelganger. So they look exactly the same. And so this adds some complication.
I thought they should have probably had the same actress play both parts. I don't know why they didn't do that.
They did. But that adds some complexity to the situation. We'll talk about that.
It's hard to know who to make out with when you have people who look alike.
Yeah.
And stuff.
So the whole first season is really establishing the relationship. There's sort of a vampire hunter who comes into town. He's a history teacher, and he plays a significant role.
Was that Professor Van Helsing? Is that who that was?
Alaric Saltzman.
Just let's call him Rick. And then there's just kind of the soap opera kind of things that go on. There's constant reference to the old days and hunting the vampires and how the vampires were squashed in the old days. And now they're
less squashed.
They've been freed from their prison. That's posing a threat. So that's kind of very Buffy, like the big bad.
I was going to say the thing that reminded me most of Buffy was that last episode or two where the sheriff deputies have this major plan to incapacitate and imprison all the vampires, right?
Happened once in the past, and now that's gonna happen. The goal is to have it happen again.
And they're kind of bad guys masquerading as good guys, I guess.
It's a good story, and it sort of towards the end of the season, there's tension between Elena and her brother, who also gets mixed up in it. Very quickly, all of these young people become aware of vampires and vampires and witches.
These vampires have no chill. They're not good secret agents.
Well, I mean, Damon infiltrates the Vampire Hunting Society.
The Founders Council. He becomes a member of the council.
Yeah, he becomes a member of the council because they assume that he's a descendant of the Salvatore, the original Salvatore family. Well, he is the original Salvatore.
That's because those guys are idiots.
You know what? Because he went through Sheriff Forbes and through Carol Lockwood. Now, what he did was he seduced them with his good looks. You do realize that, right? Like, he was so hot and so charming.
Please, that's my main move.
I know, Mark. You're familiar with that move, right?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Well, you know, that's how he was able to get them to, you know, stare into his beautiful eyes and forget that he was, you know, they didn't know he was a vampire.
But here's my thing about the council. Is Elena the only one that knows how to access microfiche? I mean, she's not, let's just say... She's a lovely girl. Let's just say she's not, you know, not Nancy Drew, right? But she figures it out by looking at a couple of newspaper articles and going, oh, that is my boyfriend.
That's kind of a big part of the story, I think, of how she discovers that Stefan is a vampire. Basically, they're at the Mystic Grill and a gentleman walks in and he's like, Stefan. Yeah, he's like, Stefan Salvatore can't be. And she starts, like, she had been noticing weird things, like him getting squeamish around blood. And a couple times she thought he saw he cut himself and then he was healed. And she was like, what the heck? When she sees him again at the car wash, she says to him, you know, what year was that? And it was like 1950 something. So that's when she went to Logan Fell, the local news reporter, and asked to go, you know, check out some of the archives at the news station. She pulls up the story on the microfiche and finds news article, a news story, and there's Stefan coming out of the background.
Can't just be a coincidence that he looks like, that much.
He's like, look, here's how it went down. My friend had this DeLorean.
Have you ever seen Back to the Future, Elena?
So I decided to go to Dance Under the Sea and meet my mom.
God, so now it's like Back to the Future, too. And that's it. I mean, she really, the season really is her coming to terms with the fact that she's dating a vampire and everybody finding out that vampires exist and not kind of really, and just kind of taking it in stride. Towards the end of the season, then Catherine comes back and she starts to cause trouble. She's the vampire who is responsible for changing Damon.
Does she own the comic book store downtown?
No.
Oh. Or a video rental store.
So now you flash forward to present day and Elena, you know, is dating this vampire. She tells him they break up. They get back together. She's like, I love you. They end up having sex. He goes downstairs to get her a snack and she does what every one of us girls do. She snoops. What's the first thing she finds is a picture of Catherine. And she's like, what in the doppelganger fuck is this? And she runs.
Yeah. I'm out.
How dare you date somebody who looked like me?
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Here just for her. Yeah. So that's another tension. And it is. It's all this like, will they or won't they get together with Stefan? And then finally you kind of get that resolution. Yes, they're together. But then also Damon's there and he's in the picture and he's causing some ripples in the relationship.
Damon's move with Elena is kind of like pulling pigtails on the playground, mm-hmm. right? It's all very giving her a hard time, giving her a ration of shit, but, you know, still flirty, kind of.
Negging her a little
bit. Oh, yeah, negging her, absolutely.
But you start to see how he is really not that bad of a person. And I say it that way because it's like as Mark says, he's a murder goblin. We all know that.
Yeah, it depends on the weather, I think, for him. He's like, oh, humidity's pretty high today. I think I'm going to be a dick.
In the last scene, we get a really juicy taste of who Catherine is. And I don't know if we want to talk about it now or talk about it in a little bit, but...
Well, I think we can just say that Catherine shows back up and fuckery ensues.
Yeah.
When we did our previous episode on the Vampire Diaries, I really struggled with trying to figure out what the theme for this show was because there's just so much material. It's a lot. You know, there's 22 episodes, 8 seasons, and trying to wrap your head around, you know, just coming up with one word or one thing to describe it is kind of hard. But I had thought maybe like Lost was kind of the overall theme for that particular episode, but I had always thought that it was a love story, but I thought it was a love story kind of between Damon, Elena, and Stefan. But when I was at the convention, speaking of Caroline, Candace King, and then I also listening to a podcast and I heard Julie Plack, one of the writers, say this as well, that they both feel that the theme of the show is a love story, but it's not a love story between Damon, Elena, and Stefan. It's a love story between Damon and Stefan and their bond as brothers.
Yeah.
As I'm rewatching it this time, I'm watching it through that lens and I'm falling in love with the show all over again. But watching it through that theme of, you know, brothers bonding, which by the way, they have their bourbon company called Brothers Bond. It just really makes me love the show more by saying that, you know, that's the theme that I see. I don't know if there's any right or wrong answer to it, but there is a lot of love going on in it. You've got Jeremy in love with Vicky, Damon still loving Catherine, John Gilbert's love for Elena as her father. You know, it's just in this season, every major storyline is really motivated by love. I'm trying to pull away from that and look closer at Damon and Stefan.
I think I'm along the same lines as you are with respect to the brothers and the story of the brothers, because of course it is a triangle, but ultimately the big conflict is, well, one of the big conflicts is that Stefan and Damon are kind of fighting, not fighting, but they're in competition for Elena's love in the same way that they were in competition for Catherine's love in the past. I would say that for me, it's kind of a Cain and Abel archetype
Fair.
Where, you know, you have an older brother who is typically the bad guy or the bad brother. And then you have the younger brother who's kind of the hero, but then it switches, and then you're kind of drawn to the bad guy brother. I don't know. So there's that tension there, and I'm going to be curious to see how that is resolved and how that. I mean, and I've of course, me being me, I've read ahead.
And you never know, though. Will the bad brother continue to be the bad brother? Is the good brother really good? We just don't know.
No, you don't know. And I for me, that's it. So yes, it is the brothers, and will they in some way iron out their differences?
No.
Or is there always going to be this tension?
Yes.
And then how will that work out? So for me, that's the
central plot point, right? They became vampires together because he couldn't leave his brother behind. Their origin story is this rivalry for Catherine. Their current story is a rivalry for Elena. And which direction, which kind of vampire are you going to be?
Not really this season, Mark, is. It's not, they're not competing for Elena this season.
They are.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they are.
No. He wants Catherine out of the tomb, first half of the season.
For the first half of the season. By the second half of the season, at the end of the season, he's kissing her, thinking it's Elena.
So don't even.
And he taunts her.
Yeah.
Because Stefan says specifically to him, you know, I know that you have feelings for her. Hands off. We're not going to have another situation like we had with Catherine. And then Damon taunts him. And, you know,
I'm here to steal your girlfriend.
She is my friend. And if she needs anything from me, I'm going to be there for her. He's
like
definitely.
Dick.
And he was there for her.
And he was there for her, you know. So I do think that there's that tension. They are kind of.
Towards the end of the season, yes. At the beginning, it's all about, for Damon, it was all about Catherine.
Catherine, right. And his disappointment then. So in the early part of it, I feel like Damon is there just to burn things down. I mean, he really is. He's there just to fuck things up.
I want to watch the world burn.
And
he made a promise to Stefan when Stefan forced him to turn back in 1864. He said, I promise you a life of misery. And he's there to make good on that promise.
Here's the thing that makes that ring false to me. If he really wants to make Stefan miserable, he can do that. They haven't been together all this time.
Kill Elena.
Right.
He hasn't been together in 15 years since 94.
Now, what can he do? Fuck things up with Elena. He could kill Elena. He could just kill Stefan. You know, like there's lots of things that he could do, and he doesn't, which means to me that bond of brotherhood is really there underpinning things.
That's exactly right. Because if they were true enemies, good Lord, apparently they get put in their dungeon in their house every week. Every week, somebody is chained in that bitch. They can't move. They're all pumped full of vervain.
The dungeon is like a main character, by the way, throughout the whole season. It's a main character.
It is.
I was just like flipping through episodes. I'm like, are we in the... Oh, there's somebody's in the dungeon. Who is it this time? And, you know, they have each other at their mercy multiple times in a single episode. Right. So hundreds of times over the season, if they really wanted to take their brother out, they could have absolutely done that. Right.
Sure.
But they don't do that because they still have that brotherly bond, even though it's complicated by intense hatred, which, you know, I can identify with my siblings as well.
I love you, but I also want to rip out your carotid artery at the same time. I feel that way about my sisters. Believe me.
You know what? Let's switch over now to where we're talking about like characters and lore, because I think something that's happening there with Damon is honestly a part of the lore of these vampires. When we're talking about vampire lore, it's sort of like, how do they work in this universe? How does this universe work? And I know that, Joanne, you have all kinds of like forward knowledge of originals and stuff like that.
Try to stay calm and stay in season one.
But we got to stay in season one. So what we know about the lore in season one is that, number one, how they are turned. Vampires, if you ingest a vampire's blood.
And then die.
With their blood in your system.
And there's a finite time that the blood is in the system. Yeah. You will come back alive. But then in order to really complete the transformation, you have to kill someone. You have to drink someone's blood.
Correct.
All right. Vampires can become daywalkers, but they have to have a special kind of ring with lapis lazuli that has a special witch spell on it, and or some kind of a jewelry. So it's and that's the way that they can walk in the daytime. Otherwise
crispy cried.
Otherwise
crispy fried.
That's right. Otherwise the sun is deadly to them. Okay, so that's another aspect of it. They are sensitive to vervain, which is a herb of some kind. Yeah. And if you soak ropes in vervain oil or whatever, that can incapacitate them. It doesn't kill them, but it incapacitates them so that you can then kill them.
If you ingest vervain and they drink your blood, they choke.
If you're wearing a kind of a vervain jewelry with a vervain on it, that will make it impossible for them to compel you. So vampires have the power to make you forget things. They have, you know, so it's a mind gift, right? They have Armand. They have they can make you forget things. They can make you think things that aren't real, I guess.
And then apparently, if you take vervain supplements, one of the side effects is indigestion and gas.
Well, and a lot of them do drink vervain. They put it in their coffee and things like that. And that also prevents the compulsion. And
in some people, it can cause a skin rash.
It's not FDA approved.
Right.
All right. So then the other part of the lore, and you'll see where I'm kind of going with this, Joanne, when I say this, is that vampires are able to turn off their emotions.
Turn off their humanity. It's a switch in their mind that they do.
They lose touch with their human side, but they can regain that contact. And it seems like they can kind of do that at will.
All they literally do is close their eyes and do something in their head and turn, like, it's an internal switch.
That's how I do it. So
there's nothing like witchy about it. They just do it and their humanity is off. And it's not easy to get it back on.
Let's see. What else? Witches exist in this universe.
This is exactly the kind of witch Joanne wants.
Can I tell you, Bonnie Bennett would fuck the Mayfair witches up.
Because she actually knows spells and doesn't just walk around slack-jawed.
These are good witches. I loved it. And when I tell you that Jasmine Guy being Grams made me feel like I was 900 years old.
Wow, Jasmine Guy, you mean from like a
different world.
It's a different world.
A different world, that's it. Yeah.
And where you come from.
That's such a great show. I love that show. Whitley. Oh, I loved her.
She was quite a character.
So the witches are powerful and they seem to they can really control vampires.
Sure can.
And so,
well, you would think that vampires would owe them a certain debt considering they make all of their
daywalking
shit
paraphernalia,
which again, you know how I feel about that.
I know, but it's still good.
But Mark, not everybody has it. Not all vampires can daywalk in this.
Right. And apparently they don't guard them all that carefully because they keep getting stolen and pickpocketed. You know, like, attenzione, your brother just stole your ring.
It's true.
Borsigatrici.
So vampires can die through with like a stake to the heart and burning.
Or flambe.
And,
yes.
And they can burn if they go in the sun. We learn that there are werewolves, but yeah. That's kind of towards the end of the season, and that's not super well developed.
Right. Now, the vampires we're encountering, are they like in the 150 to 200 year old range? I mean,
except for Catherine. Catherine's
500 years old.
Yeah. So she's like Highlander.
Yeah, she's like Highlander.
And does that give them more power?
The older you are, the stronger you are. Yes. Doesn't give you any additional powers. It's just strength.
I think that kind of wraps up all of the powers, you know, in the werewolves. It's the thing, you know, like with the moon, it's going to, that makes them turn into werewolves and stuff. So,
oh, I can't wait for you to learn about how that really happens.
And then in this universe, there are humans who are aware that vampires exist and they can create tools. And Joanne mentioned it, the Gilbert device that will help detect vampires and then incapacitate them with some kind of noise that they hear that then they are able to sort of be killed because they're laid low by this this weird noise that happens.
Yeah, it's almost like they're like psychically injecting them with vervain, and they drop to their knees. And then they're able to pick them out of the crowd, throw them into a room, and then it's where they light them on fire.
So that's the lore of the vampires in this universe that we know now. That's what we know now. And that's what we're working with. And I really honestly think that going back to Damon now as a character, when you go through the episode where he has to step in as very gallantly to take Stefan's place, because Stefan has started drinking human blood. And see, I think that's where he's kind of turning his humanity back on. I think that he's getting more in touch with his humanity, and that's, you know, he likes Elena. I think he does like Elena for Elena. I think that he, of course, initially, just like Stefan, was struck by how much she looks like Catherine. But I think that he really...
Which is a lot. Which she looks a lot like
her. She looks exactly like Catherine.
I can barely tell them apart.
But I think that he turns his humanity. I think that she helps him recapture his humanity.
Christina, you're very smart and intuitive, and I love it.
Don't tell her that.
So that's, well, I mean.
Don't tell her see, that.
So that fits into the lore.
I thought it would be fun to maybe throw in a section called Loved It, Hated It, where you can talk about, it could be a storyline, an episode, a character, whatever you loved or hated throughout season one.
I loved where Damon is, well, I don't remember what he was doing at the time, but he's talking about books.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, kind of rolling his eyes at Twilight, but it's like, you know, I really miss Anne Rice.
Mm-hmm.
And which is, you know, so meta.
It is. Right? And really, it does owe so much to Anne Rice, yeah. This story does.
And that's
absolutely.
That is the absolute correct take. So what that was great.
Okay, and what did you hate?
The car wash for the Confederacy, I was less impressed with. Let's just say that. And the whole cosplay, you know, they were so unaware. They're like, oh, you know, are you Scarlett O'Hara or whatever? She's like, always. I'm like, girl, have you guys not read any history or
listen, you know, Margo, from 2009 we were a little less woke
then. I don't think we were. I think by that point we'd figure out that slavery was bad. But and then the car wash thing was just so, like, it was very cliche. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, everybody, you know, sex it up for the car wash, which
put your little bikinis on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, not everybody did, but that's okay. But yeah, so I didn't like that scene particularly, but I really did like the kind of clever reference to Anne Rice. I thought that was very nice.
Okay, so for me, I'm a sucker for a love triangle. I love that dynamic. I like how that's developing. I really, really like Elena's brother.
That blows my mind. Jeremy Gilbert?
The stoner loser guy?
I love him.
He's so whiny.
He's not whiny. What are you talking about?
Oh, my God. He's like moping around all the time.
Well, he is moping because he's deep and he's sensitive.
Okay.
He's like, I want Vicky to love me.
He's like listening to The Cure.
Now, on the other hand, I could not stand Vicky.
Yeah.
And my happiest moment was when she died.
Died horribly, yes.
You know, when she was actually, she died. So that made me happy. I just didn't like her as a character. I just thought it was too... You know, like, here she is chasing the wealthy boy and
Tyler Lockwood.
Yeah.
And then coming to bang, you know, Elena's brother.
Yeah. So I really didn't like her. But I mean, if you really want to get into my feels, the scene where Damon, because, you know, I'm rooting for Damon. I'm looking sick at Stefan. I'm like, ew.
Okay. Calm down, Mayor Winningham.
So I was.
Okay. Listen. I appreciate rooting for Damon, but Stefan is not ew. Especially when you're like, I like Jeremy Gilbert. Blech, that's ew.
No, I mean, Stefan is ew to me because he's too much like Edward.
Okay.
I mean, he's even got that hairstyle. No on Stefan.
Even Damon does make fun of the hair. He calls it his hero hair.
Yeah, so it's thumbs down on Stefan, thumbs up on Damon. And I really did like the scene where he steps in and dances with Elena in Stefan's absence.
My loved it was really hard because obviously I literally love the whole show, but I know we're only supposed to pick one and I'm already breaking the rules. I narrowed it down to two because I can't choose between them. So the first thing that I chose was when Stefan is in his bedroom and turns around and we see Damon for the first time and he just says to him, "Hello, brother." Now, having not watched the rest of the series, you guys just don't get the significance of that yet. But trust me, it's all going to come full circle and it's going to make you fucking cry. Like it makes me cry every single time I watch it.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do these guys ever just walk into a room?
When you look like that, Mark, every time it's an entrance.
Make some fucking noise as you're coming up the stairs so you don't scare the shit out of the person.
Well, they're always like, you turn around and they're there.
You know when the camera is tight on someone's face, I'm like, oh, one of those bitches is right behind him.
Or you see an open window.
Yeah.
And where are the screens?
I always think that. I'm like, you're in the South. Don't you have bugs?
Yeah, I've lived in Virginia. You need screens.
Yeah, you fucking do.
And air conditioning.
All right, what's your other thing you love?
So my other love, of course, was Miss Mystic Falls. It, you know, just the way that Damon was there for her to escort her because Stefan was off, you know, reliving his Ripper days. Did you see him in that tuxedo? I mean, like, how could you not love that episode just for that? And when he did the dance with her, you could totally see how much he cared for her. And that was like the moment that I was like, oh, wow, I want these two together. My hated it. It was super easy. And I know we didn't talk about her, but there's this character, Lexi, who is Stefan's best friend. She's very pivotal in Stefan's story. She comes to town for Stefan's birthday. And Damon, since he's part of the town council and he's trying to root out the vampires with them, sets her up so that she takes the fall for being the vampire in town that's killing everybody. And he kills her right in front of Stefan.
That's fucked up.
He does. But Stefan really is kind of like, that's fucked up. But also that he immediately is kind of like, okay, well, that happened.
Yeah, he's not as jammed up as you would think. But I think I was more mad at Damon than Stefan was. Because I really, I can't remember the actress's name who plays Lexi. It's Ariel something. She's so good and so fun and bubbly. And thankfully we are going to see her again, but it's just, I really wish she could have been like a more of a recurring character or something.
I'm sorry. What?
Well, there'll be some history stuff.
Does anybody just die?
Oh, okay. So there's two things though, Joanne, I want to go back to. You asked me, what did I think of the history stuff?
Yes. What did you think of the 1864 scenes?
Not great from a historical perspective.
Zero fun.
What about the costumes, though?
No. And I mean, it's not meant to be historically accurate. So really what it is cosplay, you know, Civil War cosplay. And and in that respect, you know, pretty and all of that. But one of the things that I think really doesn't age well, just the
superficial
car
wash. Racism.
This is sort of the racist. There is that. And I know that you don't want me to spoil the show. And I get that. And I'm not trying to, but I have to mention the fact that I think that there are a lot of things here that are very tone deaf in terms of sensitivity.
I agree with you. There's a lot of things that, yes, we were aware of, but that shouldn't have been brought up like the way they were, obviously, with slavery. And they would have never gotten away with 90% of the stuff that they did then that they did now.
No. If they made this now, it would look very, very different.
Yeah. I could understand somewhat if it was like a Lily White show, the way that 90210 was and Dawson's Creek really was, etc. But they kind of went a step further with the whole Daughters of the Confederacy cosplay stuff. And that was just very jarring, I thought.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is that. And I mean, I guess that's a part of the lore. It's a part of the history. It's really a Southern, I think it's meant to be kind of like a Southern Gothic. Maybe the books are even more so that way. But also, it's not doing its best. It's not putting its best foot forward on that. But I blame the showrunners for that, right? Like, that's not the fault of the actors or the show. It's the showrunners.
It's upsetting because it's such a loved show.
I understand what you're saying about 2009. But look, True Blood was filmed in that exact same time period. And while they're not any kind of bastion of progressive wokeness, they knew how to have strong black characters. Right.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have overt institutional racism as a fun backdrop.
So well, this was a really fun conversation. We're going to have some more great content coming up that is focused on Interview with a Vampire and also other things. So
with teeth.
With teeth. So, Joe, do you want to take us out?
All right, guys, that is a wrap on our first deep look into the Vampire Diaries. Thank you guys for listening to our episode tonight. I hope you enjoyed hearing us talk about the Vampire Diaries. And if I turned even one of you, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, onto the show, please comment on Twitter. Let me know if you're watching it, what you think about it. But I would love to just hear about people who are watching it for the first time, because A, I'm jealous of you, and B, I just think it's so much fun.
And we'll probably look into maybe some kind of Dawson's Teeth merch.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, if you enjoyed listening to us, please share us with your friends. You can follow us on Twitter/Xer @Vampire_Insider. You can also follow Christina @ChristinaGenX. And if you, for whatever reason, want to follow Mark,
sexiness mostly,
he is @MarkEatsPeach. Thank you guys, and have a great night.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.
Bye.
I had this great idea for a little fanfic of my own.
Oh.
Where I thought I would get all the characters from Interview with the Vampire, all the vampire characters, and have them play baseball.
That's almost as good as I'm writing fan fiction for Vampire Diaries, Mark.
Yeah. Oh, I can only imagine. I'd
picture the scene.
No, I don't want to picture the scene.
Damon driving in his blue car, and he pulls down the highway, and there's a big sign that says, "Welcome to Pennsylvania." I'll let you run with what happens next.
I'd rather run away from what happens next, if that's okay. I know how you are, Face.
A lot of Face. A lot of Face.